Serious Hockey Talk for Serious Hockey Fans, where we are continuing our journey through Disney's Mighty Ducks as we prepare for the Disney Plus series Mighty Ducks Game Changers. And today we are doing D3, the Mighty Ducks. And as always, joining me through this journey is Russell Hartman. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, my friend. I'm a little peeved from our NHL stream before, but that's okay. We'll get them next time.
Yeah, full disclosure. That's the word I was looking for. Disclosure. This is Wednesday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. We just finished doing a Twitch stream of NHL 21. By the time you're listening to this, we're revving up to do another Twitch stream for NHL 21, but we're not going to be doing the threes eliminators. We're going to be working on clubs and drop-in. Because we got some chill challenges to do, boy. And I think Saturday is also the last day of season 3. So we want to try to get our club record above 500. Or at least to 500, because we're 4 games under 500. So... but we're not here to talk about our Twitch streaming. We'll plug that later. But yeah, we're talking D3 to Mighty Ducks, which you're already going on that it's the worst one of the franchise. I understand why people say that. I'm not going to say they're wrong. But let's just hop through it. So we begin at, we begin with the credits where they kind of like do a montage through the credits from the first Mighty Ducks all the way up to where we are now, where the Ducks got scholarships to Eden Hall Academy.
Which was apparently Shattuck St. Mary's, I was reading. They used Shattuck St. Mary's as Eden Hall.
Yeah. And, you know, like the players got full scholarships. You actually find out that Portman, they reference Portman, but he doesn't show up for a while. They make absolutely no mention of Jesse Hall at all, who unfortunately isn't in the movie, which is kind of sad because, like, when you looked at Jesse, he was realistically like one of the top goal scorers for the Ducks.
Oh yeah,
he really was. And but the ones who do return is Emilio Estevez, Josh Jackson, Eldon Henson, Sean Weiss, Matt Daughtry, or Doherty, Garrett Ratliff, Henson, Marguerite Moreau, and Vincent LaRusso, who are the ones who end up appearing in all three films. You obviously get back the six that you got in D2. You know, Kenan Thompson, Portman, Julie the Cat, Luis, Kenny. But yeah, so they're at Eden Hall. You have a thing where some of them are rollerblading and Goldberg can't rollerblade, which is weird because he was able to rollerblade in the first two movies with no issues.
But somehow he just forgets how to rollerblade.
I mean, let's be honest. It's okay for me to forget how to rollerblade because I'm 34 years old and I haven't done it since I was 18 years old. You know, I have an excuse. You're still a kid, you know. But yeah, so then all the ducks come in, they crash the opening ceremony, I guess, for the new school year. And yeah, which then leads into stuff between the varsity team and the junior varsity, and the ducks are obviously junior varsity. I can actually kind of relate to that a little bit. But yeah, they just, you know, they kind of go for the school year. They feel overwhelmed. Charlie is not happy because Bombay is not coming back to coach. It's now Coach Orion as the new coach of the team. And there's already, you know, friction because the Ducks are doing a Duck style practice and Orion wants them to do a Warriors style practice. And so they're just pretty much building the friction right off the bat. They end up playing their first game against the Blake Bears. Not the Black Bears, the Blake Bears.
Blake Bears.
They would go up 9-0. And then they would do their best Washington Capitals third period impersonation where they would just stop playing. But of course they would end up with a tie at the end of that game. Which obviously Coach Orion's upset, everyone else is upset. You know, Charlie's being put on to defense instead of offense, and we've always seen Charlie as a forward. Goldberg's riding the pine to Julie, but Julie is actually bored the first two periods because she doesn't face any shots. That's why they always teach us as goalies to always pay attention to what's going on and not get bored in our own mind. But I do understand that you always want to get pucks. You want to take some pucks just to feel like you're in the game at least. More friction between Charlie and Coach, which you get a bunch of pranks between the varsity and the JV teams, which leads to an unofficial scrimmage between the two. That gets them in trouble because Orion wants them to take off the Ducks jerseys. Charlie and Fulton are the two that refuse to take it off, and then they leave the team. I like the skipping school stuff. That was nice. It was cool. But then, like, Fulton's like, yeah, I'm going back. Charlie eventually goes back after Hans's unfortunate passing, where they had a funeral for Hans. Bombay returns, hangs out with Charlie, shows Charlie some stuff about Coach Orion and about why Coach Orion did not move with the North Stars to Dallas, which is pretty much because of his daughter. And, you know, Charlie then starts having a change of heart after having a heart-to-heart with Bombay. And then they actually have the official game against the Warriors. Nothing game, really good played out game. Portman returns for the third period because that's how we do things here in Disney movies. And then Goldberg would score the game winning goal.
Of all people,
Goldberg. So yeah. But yeah, so that's pretty much the movie. I mean, there's other things that I kind of glossed over, but I just want to kind of do like a generalization of the film. So I'll let you talk about it now so I can shut up and drink some water. As you can just hear me grabbing a water bottle out of my pack of water.
This was the first time I had seen D3. I'd seen D1 and D2 previously, and I wasn't sure what to expect from this one. And oh man, I was a little disappointed by this one, especially there were a number of reasons. Charlie's attitude throughout the whole movie was a big one of them. Yeah, he learns his lesson in the end, and he becomes the team's captain again. But after everything he's gone through the first two movies, it's just extremely out of character, I felt like, for him to just go completely off the rails for a little while. Is it though? I thought so. And number
because two, because keep in mind, and I'll let you get to number two in a moment. Yeah. Keep in mind, and there's actually a note about this. about why the character is played the way it is. But you remember being 14 years old, right?
Sure.
You're rebellious, right?
Sure.
There you go.
Good.
You know, you're trying to show these kids growing up.
Right.
You're essentially watching them over the last 4 years. So when they're 10 years old to now they're 14 years old, you're really telling me that from age 10 to age 14, they're going to remain the same. They're not going to react to change, like losing Gordon Bombay negatively.
But, you know, I see your point there, but he was still the captain of the team until he acted out. He was still getting to play hockey with all his friends. They still all got scholarships to this really nice hockey school. Like, at the end of the day, you know, you're still going to see Gordon. Gordon's still going to, you know, visit you. Like, I just felt like, you know, he could have handled it a little differently. But regardless, my second point here. I didn't like the lack of Emilio Estevez in this movie. And, you know, and I get why they did it. And I get that the franchise wanted to move forward because I'm sure there were other plans for more of these without him. I'm sure that originally was part of the plan, I would assume, because Disney is the money machine.
I don't think so. I think this was always set up as a – well, when they did the first movie, they were kind of going like, let's see how this goes, you know. Let's see how it goes with the first film. And the first film did well. So then, you know, they did the second. And then the second one did well. So they're like, all right, let's do the third. But in a way, they kind of felt like, you know, they essentially had him from elementary school all the way to high school.
Yeah.
Where more could you take them? You know, they did the pinnacle thing in high school, which at the end of the movie, they renamed the team from Warriors to Ducks when they won. And it's like, how much farther can you take it? Now you look at it, what's it been? About 25 years later now at this point, mm-hmm. since this film came out, because it was 96 when this movie came out.
Right.
25 years later, now you can kind of go, it's like, yeah, the Ducks are a freaking dynasty at this point now. Now, like with them doing Game Changers starting next week, that's the right refresh. That's the right moment to come in. Don't need to have all the other Ducks. Gordon's going to be there, kind of like in the Hans role. So it's like, it's kind of like a refresh, you know, just but still honoring what happened in the past. So it's not like an official reboot of it at all. It's just kind of like picking up where it left off 25 years later.
Yeah. Now, if the officiating was suspect in 1 and 2, oh my God, I love the officiating here, because there was no officiating in this movie, as far as I can tell.
So you want to know something really funny about that? I'm glad that you brought up the officiating. So can we talk about Coach Wilson for the varsity team real quick?
How he just wanted everyone to, you know, hitting is hockey, which is literally not how you play the game.
Well, besides that, did you know that the guy who plays Coach Wilson in D3, he's also a referee in the first two movies as well.
Is he really?
Oh yes. He's a utility referee in the first game, and he's an additional referee in the second game.
And they finally gave him a bigger role.
He became a coach. You can't say a referee can't become a coach. I mean,
No, that's fine. I mean, people were getting flipped through glass. People were getting boarded left and right. There was trips going on. I mean, there's no such thing as officiating. And I thought that was a hilarious part of the movie.
What's officiating? But, but yeah, no, I mean, I agree. Like the lack of officiating in this one was, but this is also a movie that had the least amount of hockey.
Yeah. And that's something else. I was like, okay, it's more of a kid movie. Like the prank war took up a lot of time. Goldberg's whole, I can't skate, but I'm going to jump off a bridge and back onto the road to meet my friends. them at the playing hooky, and like the guy subtly like, stay in school, kids, or you're gonna be a carny like me comment. Yeah. It was all there was a lot of weird things in this one.
Yeah. So some interesting tidbits. In this movie, Scott White plays the character of Scott. In D2 of the Mighty Ducks, he played the Icelandic hockey player Gunnar Stahl.
Did he?
Yeah. As noted, Brandon Adams, who played Jesse Hall in the first two films, isn't in the movie. No recognition is given to him at all. The same happened with several ducks going from the first to the second film. I think that sucks, especially the fact that, I mean, I can understand not bringing up, like you should have brought up Jesse's brother because Jesse came back for the second film.
Right.
The other two, like the figure skating girl and her brother, I can understand that one for not being touched, and maybe for like a couple others that didn't come back because they were like non-essential. But like Jesse was an integral part of the Ducks team, like in the first two movies.
Oh, and absolutely.
And I feel like, and especially the fact that they're kind of axing off a character of color, you know, because he was like the primary black player on the team. And then you got Russ and Kenan Thompson coming on. So you had two again after Jesse's brother left after the first movie. And now you're just down to Russ. And I felt that that was a little disingenuous to do that to the character of Jesse, because Jesse, like when you think about it, is a really, he's like, as much as Charlie is a heart and soul of the team, the same could be said about Jesse.
Absolutely. And it's a shame that they couldn't find a way to bring him back or address what happened to him. Even a simple like, oh, he opted to go play hockey at a different place would have been fine. But they just acted like he didn't exist. And that kind of rubbed me the wrong way, too.
Yeah. The dorm used by the varsity is the same dorm used in the movie Dead Poets Society.
Okay. And the guy who played the enforcer on varsity, Michael Cudlitz, played Abraham in AMC's The Walking Dead.
Woohoo. Walking Dead is like one of the worst shows on television. I don't know how people can get into that.
Read the comic books. They're a million times better.
So I've heard, but I'm also not big in the zombies. I'm really just not. It's not my thing. So as I noted earlier, Emilio Estevez, Josh Jackson, Eldon Henson, Sean Weiss, Matt Daugherty, Garrett Ratliff Henson, Marguerite Moreau, and Vincent LaRusso are the only actors to appear in all three Mighty Ducks movies. Stephen Brill, the writer of the film series, also makes appearances in all three films. In the first film, he played Bombay's rival lawyer, Frank Huddy. In the second film, he plays a party guest who talks to Coach Bombay about fellow sport coach Pat Riley. And then in this film, he plays the game attendant at the Mall of America who talks to Charlie and Fulton about playing hooky. Mike Vitar, who plays Luis, this was the last movie he actually made.
What happened to him?
I guess he just stopped doing movies. Claudia Wilkins, who played the principal in The Mighty Ducks, the first film, has a cameo as the teacher who gives multiple tests a week.
So
remember that teacher is like, oh, yeah, on this day you're gonna have this test, and on this day you're gonna have a pre-test, and on this day you're gonna have this test, and whatever the hell, I feel like there's gonna be like another like a random test. I'm like, damn, what the hell, bro? I would not want to be in that class. So this one kind of got past me in the last movie, but apparently in D2 The Mighty Ducks, Hans's brother Jan mentions that Charlie's mom Cassie got remarried between the first two films, but there's absolutely no mention of her still being married in this one. And
we don't see any sort of husband.
Well, if you also pay close attention, you'll easily notice that she is not wearing a wedding ring at any point of the movie, so it's implied that she is divorced again.
Oh, man. Well, she should have just married our man Gordon, but, you know, that would have been too simple.
Yep. So, remember how you talked about you didn't like Charlie's attitude?
Yeah, I mean, like, he was being a real little something this movie.
So let's throw this little statistic at you, or note, not really a statistic. In later interviews, Joshua Jackson admitted to having little to no interest in doing another Mighty Ducks movie and that he was ready to move on to more adult films or adult roles. Not films, because then he'd be doing porn. So more adult roles. Wording matters, everybody. He said he used a lot of that attitude in his portrayal of Charlie Conway in this film, as the script actually called for Charlie to be more rebellious and moody, so he channeled his feelings at the time of doing another Mighty Ducks movie through the role. So one, it was written that way, and B, the actor himself personally didn't really want to make this movie. So for him, this was him just kind of, you know, taking a script and utilizing his true feelings about wanting to, not wanting to make this movie, and making, and then creating something.
That actually is pretty good context. So I kind of understand a little bit more of that now.
Yeah. And, it makes the character come out a little bit deeper too now.
Yeah. Oh, we always say, oh, this guy was in this. There was another one I noticed too while I was watching this movie. The kid announcer of the games at Eden Hall. He's a kid named Benjamin Salisbury. Benjamin Salisbury was Brighton Sheffield on the 1990 sitcom The Nanny with Fran Drescher and Charles Shaughnessy, which was pretty cool to see.
Also, in one scene, Charlie says he is allergic to nuts. This is a reference to Joshua Jackson's real-life allergy to nuts. Connie is wearing a Minnesota Moose jersey during the Ducks' first practice at Eden Hall. Minnesota Moose were a minor league ice hockey team in the International Hockey League from 1994. Yeah, I know. Remember the IHL? From 94 to 96, before relocating to Winnipeg, Manitoba, and becoming then... I think the entire time they've always been the Manitoba Moose, until like recently when the Jets ownership bought them, and they, I think they became the Winnipeg Moose, or they're still the Manitoba Moose, I think, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, and this was the thing that I was telling you about. The actor who plays the varsity coach was actually in D2, the Mighty Ducks Are Back. He was the referee that told the team they needed a coach or they forfeit against Team Germany when Bombay showed up late. But he was also a referee in the first film as well. In D2, you hear that Adam Banks is the captain, but in D3, they say Charlie Conway has been the team's captain since District 5.
Yep.
The name Eden Hall Academy is an amalgamation of the Twin Cities suburb of Eden Prairie and private schools of Creighton Durham Hall and St. Thomas Academy. In addition, Eden Hall's commitment to excellence in varsity hockey may or not be modeled after Shattuck St. Marie's, or Mary's, a boarding school in Faribault, Minnesota, that has taught the likes of NHL stars Jonathan Tay, Zach Parise, and Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, that's supposedly one of the that's one of like the best hockey schools you can go to.
Yeah. Gee thinks Dean Buckley knows Wayne Newton since he is seen in a photograph wearing a Newt shirt, but he's actually in the picture with Newt Gingrich.
I did see that, yeah.
Also, the actor who plays Dean Buckley, you'll like this because you're a DC fan like I am. Mm-hmm. Dean Buckley, the actor who plays him, is also the voice of Commissioner Gordon in The Return of the Dark Knight, Part 1 and 2.
That's so cool.
I'm like, I'm down with that.
Yeah, I'm down with that too.
Dwayne wears a Dallas Stars jersey during the Ducks' first practice at Eden Hall Rink. The Stars relocated from their longtime home of Bloomington, Minnesota, to Dallas, Texas in 1993, a year after the franchise's predecessor, the Minnesota North Stars, and the Met Center were featured in the first film. Let's see here. During the Mall of America montage, the song Grade 9 by Bare Naked Ladies is playing. In the song is a short snippet of the song Linus and Lucy, which is considered the theme music for Peanuts. This is a nod to the fact that the amusement park in Mall of America was named Camp Snoopy at the time. I'm actually 100% okay with that because I'm a huge fan of Peanuts.
There is a lot of trivia for this one.
Yeah. And you ready for the funny one? The next note says the Minnesota North Stars relocated the Dallas to Texas in 1993. No kidding. We just took care of that one when we did the Dwayne wears a Dallas Stars jersey. Why is that in there as a separate thing?
And you got to love the cameo between the second and third period of the JV varsity game, because it's one of my favorite NHL players, Paul Kariya.
Yep. The bill for the dinner for the varsity team left for the Ducks to pay for actually comes out to $957, even though the bill says $857.
Oh, they added it up wrong?
Yeah.
Well, honestly, for how many people they were eating that kind of food, that's not that bad.
Okay, so here's a Jesse Hall note. According to some reports, Brandon Quinton Adams, who played Jesse Hall in the first two films, did not get along with co-star Kenan Thompson, who played Russ Tyler, while filming the second movie, which could explain why he did not return for the third film, despite being one of the original and more popular Ducks. Okay, I would like to hear actual confirmation, not hearsay on that. But, I mean, it's always, you know, it's always plausible for that. The only film in the trilogy where Jesse Hall doesn't call Adam Banks a cake eater, since Hall does not appear in this film. Instead, Russ Tyler refers to Banks as a cake eater. Charlie calls him that in the film as well. I think Charlie's called Adam Banks cake eater in all three films, though.
Yeah, and I thought it was crazy that, you know, it shows how good Banks was that he automatically gets put on varsity as soon as they get to the school.
Yeah. When Coach Orion posts the positions, Russ makes a comment about being placed on third line regarding it being a major diss insult. He isn't wrong in saying so, since at this point the Ducks only have 12 players, which two of which being goalies, and Russ being one of the two remaining defensemen on the team, the other being Fulton. Because Russ and Fulton were both defensemen.
Right.
And then it says here, the Eden Hall varsity coach has played a referee in the previous two films, even though it said he only did. Get your notes set up, cleaned up, man. Come on. Come on, IMDb. The jerseys they wear during the informal scrimmage at dawn slightly differ from the jerseys they wear at the end of the movie during the varsity JV showdown. The first jerseys have a gray outline around the numbers on the sleeves, while the ones at the end of the have the teal outline. Also, Charlie C at the end has the teal outline, while his C during the scrimmage had no outline at all. Jesse Hall is, however, seen very briefly in the flashbacks at the beginning of the movie. Okay, here we can talk about Goldberg and his horrible rollerblading. In the opening scene where the team is rollerblading to the school and Goldberg starts to get out of control, he can be seen wearing a t-shirt with the seal of Drexel University. Drexel is located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which is where Goldberg says he is from during the final intermission of the championship game in D2.
And he's always wearing Flyers stuff.
But also, but here's the problem with that. Here's the problem with this note that I have. Goldberg, when he was first introduced to Gordon Bombay in the very first movie, he openly noted that he was only going to be around until it was time for him to move back to Philadelphia.
And it looks like he never moved back.
He never moved back to Philadelphia. So we've known from the very first moment that we met Goldberg, he's from Philadelphia. Always known he's from Philadelphia. Horrible note right there. That's probably why two out of two people found this interesting. Even though Jesse Hall doesn't make an appearance besides very briefly in flashbacks at the beginning of the film, it seems as if Charlie has been given attributes that Jesse once possessed. Charlie is now one of the best players after being one of the worst in the first two films. He leads the Flying V against opposing teams, which he actually does. He calls Banks cake eater and also has a bad temper and rebellious nature, all traits Charlie did not have in the first two films. So essentially Charlie became Jesse.
Yes.
In a way that's whitewashing. Let's just call it how it is.
Uh-oh.
Like, Jesse's not back, so who are we going to put it on? We're going to put it on Charlie. I'm not saying that that's what their intention was to do, but in a way it kind of worked because of the interviews that Josh Jackson did where he just didn't want to do the movie that much anymore. Let's see here. All right, we're going to spoiler territory. The three players the Ducks put on the ice during the final play of the big showdown are the ones who scored the winning goal in the final game of each film in the trilogy. Charlie Conway scored the winning goal against the Hawks in the first movie.
Yep, yep.
Adam Banks scored the deciding goal in the shootout against Iceland in the sequel. And Goldberg scores the winning goal in this movie. Yeah.
Somehow Goldberg is able to convert from goalie to defense without any issues.
His skating is still suspect.
Well, he still does a comparable job at it.
You know, well, here's the thing. And actually, I can kind of relate from this, being how I was a goalie for 4 years in ice hockey. You know, I was never always the strongest skater, but realistically, when you're a goalie, you have to legitimately be your best skater on the ice. Like, goalies have to be the best skater. So I noticed... like a year or two in of playing goalie, that when I would go out to play forward, because I would play on a team where I would be on the roster as a goalie, but the coach would let me play as a forward because it made me happier. That's why he picked up three goalies on purpose. So I could play out. Thank you, Bill, for that. Like, I noticed that because of how much skating I had to do in the goalie skates, that it actually was making me better as a skater itself. So there is a kind of a translation that moves over a little bit. So when Charlie gets kicked off the team by Coach Orion after the unofficial JV varsity showdown, the only other player to join Charlie in leaving the team is Fulton. This is fitting since Fulton and Charlie were the first two players to agree to become Ducks in the first movie. They're also the only two players to show up to the game that they were forced to forfeit since the rest of the team walked out on Bombay in the first movie. So you actually have a nice little Easter egg there about that.
That is cool, because when no one was sure if they wanted to get behind Bombay in the first one, it was always those two.
Yeah. This is the only film in the Mighty Ducks trilogy not to include its respective hit theme songs, We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions by Queen.
Another reason why this movie was not nearly.
Well, let's be honest. Let's be honest. Both of these songs would not fit in the film. Where would you put them in the film? You can't put We Are the Champions at the end of the film because they didn't win a championship.
You could put We Will Rock You in this film.
You could probably find a way to fit in We Will Rock You and maybe into that final game.
Yeah.
But you can't put in We Are the Champions. They didn't win a championship.
No, they didn't win a championship. That's true.
So it's like, it doesn't fit. It doesn't work. Yeah, We Will Rock You. I agree. They probably could have fit that in there. But also, here's something that people keep forgetting. Could they get the rights to do it again?
That's true. That's not a cheap song, I would assume.
Yeah. So, despite being given top billing, Emilio Estevez only appears as Gordon Bombay at the beginning, during the middle scene with Charlie, and towards the end of the film. Altogether, he has less than 20 minutes of screen time. He was busy filming The War at Home, and he wasn't able to devote much time to this film, hence the much smaller role than in the past two films. He agreed to a smaller role in the film for free in exchange for Disney helping fund the film, The War at Home.
Was The War at Home any good?
I don't know. I never saw it. Let's take a look. Let me pull it up real quick. War at Home came out in 1996, has a IMDb score of 7 out of 10. It stars Emilio Estevez, Kathy Bates, Martin Sheen, Kimberly Williams, Paisley, Carla Gugino.
Okay.
Storyline of the film is Jeremy Collier is a Vietnam veteran who has returned home and is struggling to cope with the war experiences that haunt him. He is also at odds with his family, who cannot begin to understand what he has been through. Jeremy's battles with his family finally spiral out of control on Thanksgiving Day when a bitter secret is revealed. And Emilio Estevez obviously plays the title character, Jeremy Collier. All right, not bad. Out of all the three Mighty Ducks films, this one contains the least amount of hockey playing. The Ducks are only shown playing three times. Hans listens to them play off screen once over the radio in a scene where he and Charlie have an argument. The first being against the Blake Bears, and then twice against Varsity Warriors, including the unofficial scrimmage game. Although team member number 21, Dean Portman, returns in this film, he doesn't actually appear to rejoin the Ducks until the last 10 minutes, and even more so, he doesn't get the play for too long before getting sent to the penalty box. So his role in this film is even smaller and shorter than Gordon Bombay's.
Yeah, but he's been my favorite character for the past, like, since he was in D2, and in this movie still, like, I love that guy. I think he's so funny. The guy who plays him is really good at it, too.
Yeah, in this film, it's the only film of the Mighty Ducks trilogy where they win against their main opponents during a regulation period of a hockey game. In the first movie, they win against the Hawks by a penalty shot at the end of regulation. So regulation was already done, but they still had to give the penalty shot. And then while in the second film, they win against Iceland by a best-of-five shootout. This is the only film in the trilogy where the Ducks do not end up recruiting any new players to help them win and play better against their opponents. In the first film, they recruited Tommy and Tammy Duncan, Fulton Reed, and eventually acquired Adam Banks from their opposing rival team, the Hawks. In the second film, the eight Ducks from Minnesota are joined by Dean Portman, Julie the Cat Gaffney, Luis Mendoza, Dwayne Robertson, and Ken Wu. They also later recruit Russ Tyler to join the team. In the third movie, however, they did get Adam Banks back to their team by wanting him to come back from being on the varsity squad. So, but technically, Banks was always a Duck. The only film in the trilogy that the score of the final game doesn't have more than one goal. In the Mighty Ducks, the final score is 5-4. In D2, the final score is 6-5. And in this movie, the final score is 1-0.
The lowest scoring of all the Ducks final games. But I will say that final game was pretty cool, especially because there were no rules. Like, the rule book was thrown out. So we were getting some pretty creative hits, especially Portman flipping a guy up and over through the glass and then shattering it.
Yeah. Also, contrary to popular belief, Aaron Lorre's character Dean Portman's first appearance was not towards the end of the film, but rather during the opening scene, along with the other Ducks receiving their scholarships. He can be seen standing behind Charlie. If you look carefully just before face-off in the quack call, there's a lady behind the team wearing an Eden Hall Mighty Duck shirt. It is visible only
really.
Yeah, it is visible for only a split second. This is foreshadowing to the end of the game where, upon achieving victory, Bombier gets the school mascot redone to the Ducks and achieving Charlie's girlfriend's petition objective. When the Ducks attend their first day of school, they discuss the new coach. The rumors say he used to play with the Minnesota North Stars but left after punching his coach. Later in the movie, Hans confirms the rumor that Orion was with the North Stars and left in his prime. Later on, Gordon Bombay explains why he left, because his daughter had an accident and he didn't want to move her away from her friends, family, and doctors while she was recovering. So part of the rumor is true. The part where he punches his coach is never confirmed or denied.
Yeah, well, I feel like it's implied that he... Oh, excuse me, one second. I feel like it's implied that he didn't, because you find out how good of a person he is during that whole Bombay getting Charlie out of his funk sequence. And that was clearly something Salicious made up. I mean, the guy, look, taking his daughter out onto the ice every day, that doesn't look like someone that would punch their coach.
Yeah. Or would it? this is the first and only film in the trilogy where Charlie shares any screen time and dialogue with Hans. Also, while Bombay and Hans interacted quite a bit in the first film, they share no dialogue or screen time in this film other than standing by each other briefly during the film's opening scene where the Ducks are receiving their scholarships. Of the three movies, this film had the highest amount of interaction and tension between the Ducks and their main rival, the Varsity, due to the back and forth pranks played on one another.
Banks always is the enemy for a little bit, it seems, to the Ducks.
It's not like he's trying to be the enemy. He just gets forced into it.
I don't think he's trying either, but the movie sets him up that way.
So, let's take a look at some goofs. We never talk about the goofs. When Julie is in goal singing about how Fulton scored, you can see that her lips are not moving from behind her mask. When Charlie and Fulton are throwing up at the amusement park on their day of skipping school, the security guard tells them to take it outside, but his mouth does not move. At the end of the movie, Dwayne Robertson says, "Hey, look what Bombay did," but his lips don't move. So yeah. Apparently just stuff that was unsynchronized. Character errors. Julie's song that says that Fulton has only been able to skate for 1 year, but he had been on the team for a couple years, while Charlie said most of the team had been together for 4 years. Guy, Averman, Goldberg, Connie, and himself were together sometime before becoming the Ducks. Only about a year or less has passed between each movie, meaning Fulton has been on the team about 2 years. They were in sixth grade in the first movie and in the third as a freshman. So there you go. So sixth, seven, eight, and then ninth grade is freshman year. So this is, yeah, this is like their fourth year. That would actually be, but Fulton would technically be on the team for 4 years though, because he joined them during the sixth grade year. So technically Fulton would be a 4 year guy.
If the timelines match up, but sometimes sometimes movie timelines are kind of wonky.
Yeah, the commentator notes that Charlie doesn't have the captain scene that, and says that Charlie has been the Ducks captain since the team began. But in D2, the Mighty Ducks, it is specifically said that Adam Banks is the team captain. The team starts as Team USA, but changes to the Duck at the end. So Charlie was not always the captain of the Ducks. The six new Ducks acquired in the second film from various parts of America, all now apparently live in Minnesota with Gordon, Charlie, and the rest to attend Eden Hall. That made no sense whatsoever. While showing the Ducks touch the ice in memory of Hans, you can see number 21 skate by. 21 is Dean Portman's number, though he doesn't show up until after the second period of the game.
Holy crap, I didn't even put that together.
I didn't even notice that either. That's interesting. Right after Charlie takes off his shoulder pads after the first practice, you can see him taking them off again when the scene changes to Connie looking at the list. Maybe he put them back on. Who knows? I've done stupider things. During the game against the Blake Bears, you see the first two goals scored by the Ducks. The scoreboard goes from 2-0 to 3-0. Then they score a third goal, and the score goes from 3-0 to 4-0. When only a total of three goals were scored. Okay, let's be fair. They could have always scored. They by the time they started showing the goals being scored, they could have just already had a goal on the board.
That's true. That's fair.
That's petty. When Portman gets sent to the penalty box, he performs a striptease. One of the best moments of the film. Yeah,
that solidified for me even more that Portman was my guy.
When Ken Wu gets sent to the penalty box less than a minute later, Portman is fully dressed,
jersey on and everything.
Okay, let's be brutally honest here. They gave him his gear back, and once things calmed down, he was putting his stuff back on. So
yeah, but he threw some of his stuff into the crowd.
They're going to give it back.
Yeah, but it was
they know he's not allowed to play without the pads on. They're going to give him his freaking pads back. That's one of the stupidest ones right there, because it's like he's going to have to put it back on, and he took off his upper body gear, which is the easiest gear to put back on. If he was pulling a slap shot where he was taking the hockey pants off, the shin guards off, the hockey socks off, the jock strap off, which we'll talk about Slapshot eventually on the podcast because it's a great movie. The timeline of that would be really ridiculous, but I could realistically get all that gear back on within a minute.
Sure. Okay.
You're just doing shoulder pads, elbow pads, jersey. That's really all you're doing.
I'll give you that.
When we see Portman perform his striptease in the penalty box, the tattoo he had on his right bicep is gone.
I don't even notice that one.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that either. When Charlie is jumping over the clothesline in the rollerblading scene, the clothesline disappears as he jumps. Well, yeah, you don't want him getting guillotined and filming. Come on now. In the final seconds of the game, the announcer says that Conway has a breakaway. In the next shot, we see a Warriors player in front of Conway.
Yo, okay. So my girlfriend was watching this with me. I was waiting until we got to this part. And before I even said anything about this, she was like, isn't a breakaway when nobody's in front of you? And I was like, yeah, you're absolutely right. And you see the defenseman just hanging on him. I was like, I don't know what kind of hockey this dude's watching. That is not a breakaway.
You mean like that breakaway I could easily have had, but you didn't throw me a pass?
And won the game. We won the game.
Just wide open in their zone, just standing between the face-off circles going like, hit me. I'm sorry, I just got a review on that one. Let's see here. When Portman is put into the... we don't care about that. That's the same freaking note. So first off, when the Ducks tie against the Bears, they didn't lose to the Bears. They tied against the Bears.
Yeah, 9-9 or something.
Coach O'Ryan throws a puck at the corkboard and it puts a hole in it. When he walks out of the changing room, the hole is gone. Yeah, that's just whatever. Julie's helmet as the Ducks are paying homage to Hans in the final game. Dean Portman's helmet straps disappear and reappear repeatedly. Yeah, I noticed that. I think that was just done for filming purposes. So like when he's doing the dialogue, he has the visor up. And then like when they're about to play, he just pops it down. But when he's actually playing, the straps are there to secure it because it's not secured. So yeah, I noticed that, but I don't consider that like a continuity issue. I think that's just more of a convenience for filming. The Duck jerseys used in this movie are different than the ones they wore in D2. In D2, the numbers are on the arms are a different font than the ones in D3.
You can tell that from the jerseys for sure, that the jerseys changed a little bit.
Same thing happened between the original and D2 with the original jerseys. They had a slightly different design to them. I'm just looking at last period. When Dean Portman returns, he checks the blonde-haired varsity kid over the boards where he breaks the glass en route to crashing into some fans. And in an NHL game, when the glass is broken, they would stop the game to repair it. There is no understood delay in the GP varsity showdown.
No game delay. The glass just magically gets fixed somehow, and the game continues like nothing happened, even though a kid just flipped another kid 10 feet in the air.
You'll like this one. You'll appreciate this one. There are several infractions / misapplications of the rules of hockey.
Oh my God, we talked about that already.
Last period of the last game against the varsity team, too many men penalty is called, and coach tells Luis to take the penalty. When you see who's in the box, it's still Portman and Ken, not Luis. Okay, I call BS on that. What I heard was Luis back on the bench, Wu served the penalty. Yeah, I heard
That's what I think I heard too. Yeah.
Yeah, so I call that one BS. When Gordon and Charlie spend the day together after Hans passes away, they stop to look at an old high school photo of Bombay. The photo places Gordon in high school, probably his senior year, 1975. Gordon's infamous penalty shot took place in 1973. When he was only 11 or 12 years old.
So Gordon was ahead of the curve, clearly, in high school.
That's some high schooler. that's really all I have on that. Of the Mighty Ducks films, the first one got a 6.6 out of 10. The second one got a 6.1 out of 10. And this one got a 5.5 out of 10. It came out October 4th, 1996, which was 3 days after my 10th birthday.
October 4th, 1996. So I was 2 years old, and a half years old.
This was literally 3 days after my 10th birthday. I'm okay with that. So I had two movies essentially come out the day or days after my birthday. I'm okay with this. So, I mean, here's the thing. I know I've been reading a lot of the trivia and all this other stuff. And I told like Ross that there's a lot of parallels for me with this movie. So like for me, this movie relates to me very well. It wouldn't dawn on me till much later, but it actually does, and here's why. So this one is a focus on high school hockey. Russ, as you know, because we've talked about it, I played high school hockey.
Yeah.
I played for my high school team. And I use the word play loosely because they never let me play. And that's part of the reason why this relates to me is that, you know, when you look at the Ducks and Eden Hall University, the Ducks are the poor kids and the Warriors are the rich kids.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Churchill High School in Potomac, Maryland, which is a very, very rich area. And so I was essentially the poor kid at a rich kid school, albeit a public school, but still a poor kid at a rich kid school. So I kind of dealt with the same disadvantages that like the Ducks were feeling, like with the bullying and stuff like that. Like I literally had it like kind of with like with Charlie, where he was put down on defense and Goldberg was put as the second goalie behind Julie and then eventually became a defenseman. You know, I remember trying out for Churchill as a forward, getting cut as a forward, and then brought back as a third string goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, when I use the word play, I use it very loosely because I never really played for my high school team. Mm-hmm. I was just there. I was actually wildly, especially because I did my sophomore year was my first year playing for Churchill. And that's when I got cut as a forward, brought back as a goalie, third stringer. My mom spent thousands of dollars on goalie equipment, which I got the Patrick Waugh edition goalie pads because Patrick Waugh is the best goalie of all time. So I really love Patrick Waugh's pads. And it took my mom years to pay that off. So just from
I
was possibly one of the hardest working guys on the ice simply because I was the one that was behind the eight ball because I got cut as a forward and had to learn a whole new position. And the other two goalies would literally just pick on me all the time. And one goalie, he would like, I'm still trying to learn how to skate in goalie skates. Like I can skate perfectly fine in like regular ice hockey skates. Like I can go ice skating right now and I'd be skating perfectly fine, no problems. But if you put me in goalie skates, it's going to take me a time to adjust to it and learn how to skate with duller blades. That's something that a lot of people don't know. Goalie skates have duller blades for the purpose of being able to slide back and forth easier.
Right.
That's why goalies have to be the best skaters on the ice. And I just remember one practice, Thomas Fleischman was his name. I don't care if people get pissed at me for calling these people out. They fucking deserve it. They're fucking bullies. I just dropped an F-bomb. I'm sorry. This podcast usually doesn't have any cursing, but you know, when it comes to this type of stuff, you might want to forgive me for it. But, you know, I remember one practice, Thomas Fleischmann, he purposely would always try to trip me. And then eventually he did trip me, and I just was like, the hell with this. And I literally dropped the gloves and I grabbed them and I started punching him. And it literally took the entire team to pull me off him because I was just that pissed off.
Yeah.
Like I, you know, cause it was like near the middle, like I think we're getting to like the third quarter part of the season. And it was just so, you know, the frustration of just being bullied just boiled up. It just boiled over at that point.
Oh yeah. It gets to you.
And like, and the thing that really pisses me off, and I think that the coach was just put in a really bad spot because he didn't return after that season. They brought somebody else in after that season. And I was on JV, just to clarify. I was on the JV team. Coach had no choice because I was the poor kid and the other kid and Thomas was the rich kid. He didn't have anything done against him for all the bullying that he did against me. Like him and Matt Haven, not a thing was done to him. I was suspended a game. The third string goalie was suspended for a game. Somebody who was not going to get to play
at all. Yeah, it didn't make
got any- suspended for a game because they stood up for themselves for being bullied. And it sucks, you know, and it's just, you know, so when I see stuff with D3, you see Ken Wu getting bullied all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like I kind of look at it and I look at some of the stuff going on in D3 and I look at what I went through when I was in high school playing high school hockey and I see the parallels. That's why it resonates with me more than it may with you. I mean, but yet again, this was also the first time for you to sit down and watch it. You know, maybe if you watch it another couple of times, you might go, you know, I missed this, I missed that. And, you know, and then you can start relating the things.
I'll say this as my like close, my final comment here. I played roller hockey through my first year in middle school up through my third year in high school. So about 6-7 years I played roller. It's a great time. Won 3 titles, won a best defenseman award. It was wonderful. I shifted from center to defense for the second half of my roller career. I had a great time. Eventually, you know, I stopped. I went away to college, came back home to New York, and I tried getting into it again. I skated during college. I had a roller hockey club during college. We played on weekends. It was great. It was a good time, but I wanted to play in a league again. I wanted to play, you know, I wanted to try to see if I could keep up and win a title again. Kind of a rude awakening when, you know, I'm kind of a short person myself. I'm only around 5'6". I'm not that tall. And then when you try to get back into hockey a few years later and everyone that you played with had a crazy growth spurt and you didn't, and you're getting pushed around and you become like the 7th defenseman and you know, some games you don't really get much playing time. It kind of gets on you. And when you do get on the ice, you're getting pushed around. And that was where I kind of realized that it was time. So if I do anything with hockey in my hockey career again, it will probably be coaching at some point, but we'll see if we get to
or playing for the Apostles and Rufus when we're allowed in Canada.
That is true when we get allowed in Canada, but that would be great.
Get vaccinated, we got to do it. But actually, and that's another thing that, you know, you're talking about, you know, coming up and playing. You know, I remember that year too. That year specifically, I did get to play a game. It was kind of like after the season was over type deal. And we end up playing against the Montgomery Blue Devils, which is like a local hockey program, because I guess Fleischmann and Haven played on the team and whatnot. And like, so I was automatically the goalie of the play.
Right.
And I know I can tell you which guys were actually trying to play in front of me and give me the best chance to win, but you could tell that the team in front of me left me out to dry.
Fair.
Like you could tell they left me out to dry. And that was just, you know, again, it just pissed me off. I mean,
and it hurts. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, so I was like, well, the hell with this. I'm just going to go back to Frederick. I'm just going to play up in Frederick, you know, where I'm going to play under Bill Bars. And, yeah, he'll bring me on the team as a goalie, but he's going to let me play as a forward. He's going to let me develop as a forward and, you know, teach me about being a role player and let me be a captain and, you know, all that other stuff, you know? So it's like, you know, you kind of say, you know, the hell with this. And, you know, I didn't play my junior year for Churchill. I played the second half of my senior year with Churchill simply because they literally begged me because they needed a backup goaltender. Like, they only had one goalie on JV and they couldn't have a varsity goalie play for them in the playoffs. That was the only reason why I came back, was because I had a chance to play. You know, I actually got to play 2 minutes in the JV state championship game. Didn't start the game, but I got put in when we were losing 5-0. You would expect me to just finish the game because the other goalie gave up 5 goals, but
right,
whatever. You know, again, poor kid on a rich kid team. Poor kid on a rich kid team. Eyes are always going to be stacked against you no matter how hard you work. So sorry for the F-bomb earlier, everybody. It's just, you know, it's like, that's the thing. Like, but that's what this movie does for me. It just kind of reminds me about what I had to endure in high school, you know, as a hockey player. And like now I'm just doing ball hockey, you know, just running around. I'm a goal scorer. I'm a top defenseman. I can pretty much do it all at that point, except for play goalie. I just stay away from the net. Unless I'm shooting on it. So, but with that, that was a D3 of the Mighty Ducks. Next week, we begin our journey through Mighty Ducks Game Changers, the Disney Plus series. Going to try to keep the recording or the episodes coming out on a consistent basis of Saturday at 1. I'll obviously put out a tweet if something comes up that delays it potentially. I know I'm getting a new job and just waiting on my start date, so I know that will affect things a little bit there. Because I also record Nerdy Notions on Fridays, and especially with Falcon Winter Soldier debuting. Technically at the release of this episode yesterday, but at the time of recording in 2 days, we're getting Falcon Winter Soldier. So I'm going to be recording episodes on Nerdy Notions for Falcon Winter Soldier and TXHT for Mighty Ducks Game Changers at the same time. So it's going to be chaotic a little bit, but we'll manage. So, but Russ, where can the people find you on the social medias?
As always, the people can find me at RussellHartman1 on Twitter. That's where you'll find all my updates for all my writing, podcast material. And hopefully I'm going to start sharing our stream so more people can see us and the Apostles of Rufus have some fun on NHL 21. My pieces on THT will be posted on there, as well as my pieces from Blue Seat Blogs.
All righty. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at @TheLindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/X75Productions. Everything's on the website, txhthockey.com. And of course, on Twitch, where you can watch Russ and I play NHL 21 on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern time, twitch.tv/TheMichaelX75. And of course, we're usually joined by Nick, maybe occasionally on the rare occurrence, Eddie, from time to time, Garney, and on rare occurrences, Scott. So with that, until next time, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we will see you on the ice.